Shot fakes on a three, now crosses over. Kicks to Vic. Can he go 8 for 8? Yes! Absolutely unreal! Latrell Vic with the greatest three-point shooting night in KU history.
It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
Why? Because his voice is so velvety smooth.
Yo, Manella, kick it one time, boy.
It makes the girls go,
oh my.
He's a rapper so fly.
So if you want sports talk that's more than just a score, you gotta listen to Wade on KD Country 94. We got the tunes that'll make you shake and bake. Z96.3, The Lake.
He makes Eminem wanna cry. It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Heaney.
Sportos, motorheads, geeks, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Right now, on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie at 118 North Millen Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.
That intro only means one thing. It means it's time to talk Jayhawk athletics with the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney. It also means it is a Thursday as the weekend is closing in. Looking forward to that, although it looks like the weather is going to be nice today and tomorrow, and then this weekend not so great. But we will deal with it. That's what we have to do in the state of Kansas. And a guy that was absolutely off the charts, red hot, despite the temperatures outside, was Mr. LaGerald Vic, and Brian was there to call that one. Have you seen a performance anything like that before?
You know, the only thing that comes close was also LaGerald Vic 2 years ago versus Long Beach State, and that was the night when he had a chance to tie Norm Cook and Danny Manning's record for most makes without a miss of any type of field goal. And you might recall Carlton Bragg had kind of a bonehead play on the other end of the floor that wiped off a basket 90 feet the other direction on a breakaway that would have matched Norm Cook and Danny Manning's 10-for-10 record. So Vic had to settle for 9-for-9. But five of those were twos, and to see, you know, 8 threes made and honestly 10 shots from 21 feet made, he had a couple where his toe was on the line. Otherwise, he would have tied the NCAA record, which you looked up for me and Coach Self last night on Hawk Talk, which was awesome, going back to 2008. And I believe it was Andre Smith from George Mason, 10-for-10. I mean, literally, he was on the line on two other ones. Otherwise, he would have had it. And folks say, yeah, but it's November and it's Vermont. Hey, it's an NCAA tournament team that's as good as they are because they've got great guard play. And after he hit the first couple, he was a marked man the rest of the night, and he still kept pulling the trigger. And it got to the point where me and Greg Gurley, after he'd already broken Rex Walters and Ben McLemore's KU record, like, okay, don't shoot anymore, don't shoot anymore. Like, we don't want to see you miss one after hitting the first seven. He kept firing. He kept hitting. And I was like, this is unreal. I've never seen anything like this. So his own night 2 years ago is the closest thing to it. But like I said, those shots were all over the floor. There have been plenty of great individual shooting performances. I mean, Malik Newman goes for 30-plus in the Elite Eight game versus Duke, which is obviously on a much bigger stage. But he had plenty of misses in there, too. To see a guy like that who, as you pointed out to me, wasn't just making shots. It was, like, so pure, like when Wade's on the golf course and he's putting and it's, like, center cut of the cup right down the middle every time. No rim shots around the edge, nothing that rattles home. I mean, just nothing but nylon, literally. That was exciting. And hopefully it's something that, for him, gives him a lot of confidence moving forward, because obviously this was on the heels of a 1-for-7 game. Just 2 points in Michigan State, and I asked Coach if there was any private huddle up, between games between him and LaGerald, his lone senior leader here, and he kind of laughed at the question and said, no, we don't give him a do better speech. But you had to wonder, because, I mean, he was really not a factor at all in that game up in Indianapolis, and then the biggest reason that they won on Monday. So pretty excited to see that turnaround one game for the Nets.
Well, I was like you there at the end, especially in the final seconds. I'm like, okay, don't jack one up here and then ruin it and go 8 for 9 from three. So I was kind of feeling the same way you were. And it was a once-in-a-lifetime night for LeGerald Vick, and KU needed it. I mean, without LeGerald Vick, KU's in big trouble in this game because in the first half, they're down 8. Vick came up with some big-time shots, as we talked about, and he really single-handedly kept them a game in the first half, and then Ozebuke had a solid night for Kansas, 23 points, 11 rebounds. And, you know, here's the thing that really stood out to me is LeGerald Vick goes off for 32. He's not normally going to do that, and he's certainly not normally going to go 8 for 8 from three. And Doak had an outstanding night, and you can see that he's going to do that probably more often, have some double-doubles. But Dedrick Lawson goes 0 for. He wasn't very assertive, didn't have a single point. Quentin Grimes didn't have a great game. Dotson, I think, had 6 or 7 points. Charlie Moore, I thought, gave him a really good boost off the bench, and he's going to be a key to this basketball team down the line, in my opinion. And you just look at this Kansas team. They just played a team that you mentioned that could very well be NCAA tournament bound and would have been last year if not for the fact you got to win your mid-major tournament. Forget everything that you accomplished all year. It comes down to one game to get into the NCAA tournament. And oddly enough, the team they lost to was a team that beat the number one seed, Virginia, and that was UMBC. And so a really good team comes to town, and they push you, and you might be stressing out a little bit, and yet you win the game by 16 points, and your best player, supposedly your best player, according to many, doesn't score a point. That tells you how good this team is, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it shows you the depth that maybe we wondered how good would the depth be on this year's team. Vick coming back makes it a huge difference. And then, you know, Charlie Moore really did come a long ways in the 1 year he had transferring between Cal and here. I think when he showed up, you know, I don't want to say there was baby fat on him, but he's got that baby face, yes. And he was a little soft. And you give Andrea Hootie 12 months with anybody, and she'll make him look way different. Heck, you give her 12 minutes with guys like you and me, we'd feel different. So,
yes.
he's become a hard-rocking dude now, and while he's not going to start more than likely because you love what you have with Devon and Quentin, boy, you know what a weapon to bring in off the bench. And I just love this template of taking transfer guys that now, you know, the only Reed sophomore next to his name on the roster, but he's 21. He's 3 years removed from school. He's, you know, 2.5 seasons deep with college coaching and D1 athletics training. That's the same way it was with Malik Newman. And so, you know, if a guy like Charlie, who's going to stay longer than Malik did, winds up being here for the rest of his eligibility, I mean, he's much better for it, having had that extra year to mature and develop and grow and get better and all that. And so it does speak to the depth that they could have other guys step up. It speaks to Udoka. You know, being able to log 34 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, how often have we seen that in his career? I know he's done it before, north of 30 and all that, but, I mean, they clearly did not have an answer for him once he caught it deep on the block. And Kansas did a terrific job, Quentin Grimes in particular, in lobbing it up to him. And that's tougher than it looks. Yeah, I realize he's got a wingspan of like 7'3", and you know, he's bigger than all these Vermont guys. And you think, oh, just throw it up there anywhere within 8 feet, he'll go get it. But, I mean, they've got two guys, four arms, swatting at balls. You've got to put it at the perfect angle where only he can get it. But once you do, it's kind of like a touchdown pass. I mean, as long as he makes the catch, you're getting points, right? Because he's going to turn and just hammer it down. And in some cases, they were able to foul him before the dunk. But, I mean, to see the dunking display he put on because, A, he stayed out of foul trouble. B, he was able to run the floor and be on the court for 34 of the 40 minutes. And C, show good hands receiving all those passes. And Kansas really played to its strength, saying, you know what? They may have some great guards on the floor, but there's one position out of five where they absolutely, positively cannot match up with us. Let's feed the big fella and let him eat. And that's exactly what they did, and that's exactly what Doak took advantage of. And self-joked, you know, this is the worst he shot in the last 2 years, 10 of 17. He said to be on his pace from last season when he shot 77%, he probably needed to hit three more. But we can joke about that because they won the game, and they won the game in large part because of him, because they were some key junctures where they absolutely had to have a bucket, and they went to the one weapon that clearly Vermont did not have one of, and that was Udoka.
Yeah, absolutely. The voice of JX, Brian Haney, with us in his appearance on our show every Thursday on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill and Boyd, or give them a call at 738-5701. I know we talked about this before. Doak's free throw stroke looks so much better, so much more compact. And when he misses, it's either short or long. And last year when he missed, it was all over the place. So I think he's going to be fine at the foul line as long as he has his confidence. But I want to tie in, I want to ask you about another big man who didn't even play the other night, but gave him a few good minutes in the first half against Michigan State, and that is McDonald's All-American David McCormick. I mean, that guy, I look at him, I'm like, man, he could be a factor later on this year if he can get on the floor. I would think he would start for every team in the Big 12 except Kansas because they're so deep, and he would definitely be one of the top guys off the bench for Kansas State, who's supposed to be the biggest challenger to Kansas in the Big 12 race, and certainly you can understand that with everybody coming back from last year's team that made it to the Elite Eight. What about his role and his development for Kansas down the line? Do you think he's going to be a factor, or is this just a situation where he just can't break through to get on the floor?
Said yesterday on Hawk Talk that he felt like that was a little bit on him, Coach Self, not McCormick, for needing to find the opportunity to give him a game, and they should have had some minutes in there. But Doak was going so well and had kind of started to take over in a way that, hey, if he doesn't have sound trouble and not be too gassed, we're just going to roll with it. And the lineup combinations they had were such that they were going to go with, you know, four out, one in with Doak, a lot like what we saw a year ago. And you're not going to typically play those two side by side because they're so similar. You can play Diedrich and Doak side by side because Diedrich has a lot of guard skills and, you know, is such a good distributor. He can step back and score from 15 to 20 feet with relative ease. I know we haven't seen that recently, but he absolutely can. David and Doak, while not mirror images of one another, are probably the closest thing to each other on the roster. So he's not going to do the traditional, you know, Illinois-style high-low, two big side-by-side unless one of those bigs is a little bit more, I guess, comprised of the skills of a Diedrich Lawson type guy, you know, or a Mitch. Mm-hmm. You know, Mitch is more of a true four-man, and you can play him out away from the basket a little bit. You know, part of that is, it's not that those two couldn't play next to each other and pass back and forth. It's just they take up so much stinking space, it's hard to navigate around. You know, you want to be able to have two bigs in there for rebounding and commanding attention, but you don't want to clog the lane to the point where you're blocking yourself. Not literally, but I mean clogging the room to roam. So that's kind of what went into it. It had nothing to do with him being, you know, in any type of trouble or sick or anything like that. He's going to be fine. They need to get him in there. And I think, you know, from the kid that I've talked to on a couple of occasions now, I am nothing but impressed with McCormick and just really feel like we're going to have him here for 2 or 3 years and he's going to be one of those all-conference caliber guys when it's all said and done. Right now, he's clearly playing behind two guys with All-American potential, and I'm putting Doak in that category. I honestly thought that Doak didn't get nearly enough preseason ink that he deserved, and I understand why. There's clearly some deficiencies in his game he needs to clean up, but I mean, this is a guy that led the nation in field goal percentage a year ago, number two on the all-time lists nationally, number one at Kansas, and I think he has a chance to have a monster season. So with that in mind, and with Diedrich most nights playing much better than we've seen these last two nights, David's going to have to pick his spots, and he'll probably be for little four-minute stretches once per half, unless there's foul trouble, and then it'll be more than that. But this was a game the other night where the matchups and the way Doak was rolling just called for him to not get nearly as much run.
KU against Louisiana coming up tomorrow night. You hear that on Z96.3 The Lake. And then KU will be in New York next week, Marquette. And then, well, it'll be a heck of a matchup. It'll be Tennessee versus KU. Tennessee, a top 10 team. Let's shift to football. KU falling in the Sunflower Showdown to K-State 21-17. Really a rough way for the game to end. You're driving, and it looked like the perfect play call. It looked like it was going to go for a lot of yards, and the ball slips out of the hand of Peyton Bender. And I know it was a tough loss for the entire team. They put so much into that game, wanting to end that streak in Manhattan, end the Big 12 road losing streak. And I guess the question I have for you is they go to Norman now this week, and they're not going to be bowl eligible. They're 3-7, and some people would say you're playing out the string. David Beatty, of course, will be done after the Texas game. And you go into Oklahoma, top six team. They're number six in the country. They have a lot to play for to stay in the football playoff race. It's in Norman. Now it's a primetime game in the evening. We see this a lot of times in sports, Brian, where a team puts so much into one game, and sometimes they might win it, and then it's tough to get back up for the next game, or they lose a tough game that they really put a lot of stock into. I guess my question is, how do they bounce back from that very difficult loss? A game that they felt like they should have won, dominated the first half, led just 3-0, and the end, they couldn't get it done.
You know, I think what I'm supposed to say here is that when you've got 25 seniors that care as much as these guys do, they're never going to mail anything in, mm-hmm. and they're going to fight because they've only got two more times to put on that Kansas uniform, and it means so stinking much to them. And I genuinely believe that, so I'm not just saying that because that's what I'm supposed to say. But your question is a good one because in the back of my mind, just looking at it, naturally wondering out loud, how do you keep getting back up when you've been through so much of an emotional roller coaster? And now, you know, the possibility of bowl eligibility, not that that was ever really something that they were thinking strongly about the last couple of weeks. They were taking it week to week. But now that that's out of the equation, now that your rival game that you knew was your best remaining chance slipped through your grasp, literally, you know, how do you get up from that? I don't know, you know, and that does concern me a lot. I think that of the two, being around some of these guys on Tuesday night for Hawk Talk, of the two that I hear them chattering about, it's senior day versus Texas because yep. they've beaten Texas at home before. It's their last hurrah. Yes, there isn't much of a home field advantage when it comes to the attendance in recent weeks, but it's still a home game. And I think that they're thinking about that. Now, that doesn't mean that they're looking past Oklahoma at all. Joe Dineen and Daniel Wise wouldn't stand for that. There's no way anybody could mail that one in. But I wonder the same things you wondered. I'm just being honest with you. I think that, you know, it's only natural that there's got to be some kind of letdown at some point. But like we talked about on last week's show, no matter where you sit on the David Beatty argument in terms of did he make this place better, did it just kind of tread water for a while, I for one believe he did make it better. And I do think the one undeniable thing you can't argue against is that this guy in the month of November got his team to compete even in the middle of lost 2-10, 1-11 type seasons. And the Texas game is obviously terrific proof of that 2 years ago. And so I do think that they'll be competing and fighting hard. But obviously, if there was one buzzsaw on the schedule where regardless of, you know, the juncture with which you play them or what's going on around your program, you're walking into a Lion's Den with a meat necklace, it's going to Norman for prime time with Kyler Murray trying to post video game numbers to you know, hop on top of the Heisman race. And, you know, with an OU team that quite frankly needs style points right now to climb up higher in the college football playoff. Beating Kansas in and of itself is not going to do anything for them, but beating Kansas by a boatload might have to be the case. So I think they're going to be turned up. The good news is you can move the ball on OU this year, and obviously you know about the firing of their defensive coordinator, you know about Ruffin McNeil taking over, you know about 47 points they just gave up in the Bedlam game. The thing that I have a hard time wrapping my head around is, let's say Kansas does score it much better than we've seen because OU is a little bit susceptible this year defensively. Let's say they play a game in the mid-30s. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Gosh, can we still hold them in the mid-30s in their house? Now, this is the Kansas defense. It clearly is the strength of this team. And right. 9 out of 10 games this year, they played well enough to win. But realistically, can you imagine them holding Kyler Murray and now this rejuvenated running attack that we've seen the last couple of weeks to 5 touchdowns or less? Maybe, but to me, more than anything, as I think about plausible possibilities to win this game, you're probably going to need a defensive score. You're probably going to need a special teams huge play, whether it's a kick return or a takeaway or something, to get some extra scoring chances because no matter how good Clint Bowen schemes it, and I have the utmost confidence in his ability to muck it up a little bit and do something to thwart what OU would normally be able to do. No matter how well he does that, though, this is still a guy unlike any they've faced this year in Kyler Murray in terms of his explosiveness and all of that, his escapability and playmaking ability. And it's still a juggernaut unlike any they've faced this season. They just haven't. You know, they've faced good teams, good offenses, but nothing like this. So, I mean, they average 49 a game, and this is in their house on primetime when they need to score a lot of points. So I'm telling you, I believe in our seniors. I think they will compete. They're not going to see anything mailed in, but if it did go OU's way in a lopsided game, you couldn't be surprised at all just based on the sheer talent on that side and then everything emotionally and mentally these Kansas players have been through in recent weeks. So hopefully it's not that. Hopefully it's neck and neck game, and maybe they pull the stunner of all stunners, and that's how we remember these guys, you know. Heck, Iowa State won in Norman a year ago, but this is certainly going to be a Herculean challenge for Kansas.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's the worst case scenario, the timing, and as we already referred to, Oklahoma has a lot to play for, and Kansas, of course, coming off that tough loss at K-State. I agree with you. They're going to get up senior day, final game, playing with Coach Beatty. We know they love playing for him, they play hard for him. I can see a lot of emotion. They're going to play inspired that last game, and that will be at home. But going to Norman, it looks like a tough task, no doubt about it. All right, time for the off-the-wall question for you, Brian. Daylight savings time ended here recently, and so we have to fall back with the clocks. And, of course, in the spring, we spring forward. So it's kind of a two-part question. First, are you a fan or not a fan of daylight savings time?
You know, when I was a kid and in the springtime, it meant suddenly we could stay on the driveway until like 8:30 at night and play basketball and it's still light out. I loved it, and I didn't mind giving up that hour because, you know, suddenly it extended playtime in the evening. Now, as an adult, I probably hunker down and appreciate fall more because I need that extra hour of sleep, especially during crossover season. And this year I used it because we had a 6 a.m. Kansas half marathon I had to MC the next morning. So 6 a.m. was really 7, and it saved my bacon. But to me, I don't think about it that much. But those are the two different ways I've looked at it in my 38 years of living.
Okay, so the second part of the question is, this is if I run for president in 2020, this is one of my big topic issues, and that is I want to move the time that they change daylight savings time when they end it, which is the first weekend in November. Sometimes people forget about it. Sometimes it doesn't make sense because it's like their farmers are still trying to do various things out there, and you shorten the day. You're not technically shortening the day, as we know. We're just moving the daylight with the time. Here's my grand idea, Brian, and I want to see what you think about it. When is there ever a night where you probably need to gain an hour of sleep and would also be very easy to remember? Here's my proposal. Daylight savings times is extended until January 1st. At 2 a.m. every January 1st, you know it's coming because every year it's on New Year's Day. It allows you to stay out and party an extra hour if you want to, or if you've had a long night of partying, that extra hour of sleep could really come in handy the next day. What do you think?
I like it. I really like it. Now, if some would say you need that savings time taking effect a month or two earlier, in which case maybe you do it after Halloween and maybe, you know, do it every year after that so that those sit out late in candy or adult costume parties or whatever would have it. But there's definitely a lot more sense to be made in your case for New Year's, because that's something almost everybody goes out to celebrate. So I get it. I think that's... that's maybe not like your number one campaigning point.
Well, that's the best I got so far.
I don't think that's like your driving statement, but definitely put it on the ticket and on the platform as something to discuss.
You think that single issue is not going to win me the election? Is what you're telling me? It's just going to be a nice supplemental idea. Okay, I got you. I'll build off of that. All right.
Hey, I'm running that Saturday's broadcast. Don't talk too much politics on the air, because David Lawrence referenced Joe Dineen as the governor, not the mayor. And his nickname's the mayor, and he just slipped to the governor. And then I said something about, did you get permission from Laura Kelly to say that? And then somebody tweeted at me, hey, she's not the governor yet. I'm not making a campaign statement. I mean, she was the governor elect,
right?
She hasn't been sworn in. But the point is, I learned my lesson, because I try not to, you know, show party affiliation either direction, but folks care about that stuff. So I'll just say this, Gerstner for president, or even Gerstner for governor in 20-whatever, I'm all over it, man. I guess governor, you'd have to wait a little bit longer. But yeah, I'm with you, buddy. You just let me know how I can help your campaign. And, I can't be your running mate. I'm getting busy right now, but I will certainly endorse you. That's for sure.
That sounds good. I love that support. I'll plan on that and count on that in the future. Hey, man, always a blast talking with you. I guess we'll work out things and see if we can get you on next week sometime. Of course, Thanksgiving's next Thursday, and we won't be here. We'll be with family on Thursday. But we'll work that out one way or another, and we appreciate everything you do for not only the university, but for promoting KU athletics across the state. And we always appreciate your time every Thursday here on The Ticket.
Well, thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. Certainly thankful for you as we head into Thanksgiving week. Thankful for your friendship. And We'll look forward to chatting next week from NYC.
Sounds good. Take care, man. Safe travels.
Thank you.
That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. And you can give them a call at 738-5701 or stop by and see Matt and Jamie, 118 North Mill in Beloit.